Sasha Banks returns to the WWE after a four-month absence and turns heel? Or does she? Your full WWE Raw review starts right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is Tuesday, August 13th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. This is a WWE Raw review show, and a lot to talk about, a lot of good stuff to talk about. I really don't have a ton to rant about. I'm sure I'll find something, as I always do. But, you know, as a whole, so far, so good with WWE programming this week. Of course, you guys know, I did not watch NXT. I'm still working on getting a correspondent or a guest host to consistently come in every week and do a NXT podcast. Especially when you have your takeover shows and things. So that is still in the works. But as far as the main roster shows go, I would say it was two thumbs up. A thumbs up for SummerSlam and a thumbs up for Monday Night Raw. Let's see if they can keep that going with SmackDown Live, which I'll be doing a review on, of course, tomorrow night. And then that might do it as far as podcasts for the week. I got a lot of other stuff going on. As you guys know, I'm traveling. It's just impossible for me to do a show. But I did put up a new article from one of our great contributors this week, and all about Seth Rollins being the Beast Slayer. And I highly recommend you check that out. So while you can't get any new audio beyond Wednesday, there will be more articles up for you guys to read. So check that out at WWEpodcast.com. But if it's audio that you crave, then really anywhere you find a podcast app, you will find this show. And by the way, I know there's multiple streams of this show out there. I don't know why. I'm working on how that happened, why that happened, and getting rid of it. So there should only be one feed out there for this show. It should just be one. It's not somebody else. It's me. I don't know what I did to create a duplicate feed, but I am aware of it and I'm working on it, so bear with me. But thank you for those of you who are listening and watching, and not watching yet. Video is coming. I have been saying that, and I really do mean it. It's just the logistics of getting it up and running and how I want to do it. Do I want a live format? And you know what? Maybe I'll toss this to you guys. Number one, do you want audio or video, rather? And do you want it as a live stream, or would you want it pre-recorded? Are you interested in that at all? That's something that I think can work really well to differentiate yourself from other shows and to do a show that is recorded live. I know that there's live streaming I can do on CastBox and Spreaker. I can actually go live. So that's something I'm thinking about. But the video thing is something I'm definitely kicking around, and I'm going to toss that to you guys. Whether you don't give a damn about video, or you're like, hey, I think that'd be a good idea, it'd be cool. Throw me an email at realwwepodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. I really would appreciate your feedback, because it's something that I've gotten good feedback on in the past, but it's been a little while since I've polled you guys, and I want to just know whether it's something that you'd like to see. And all right, moving down the line here, let's just get into Monday Night Raw, because I have a lot of good things to say about it. But let's get to Monday Night Raw, and there's really one topic here. There's one top story. Some weeks there are competing top stories. You can make a case for multiple things that happen on Raw that you could start the show off with. In this case, I think it's irrefutable, undeniable, that there's one topic right now that everyone's talking about, and that is Sasha Banks' return and her subsequent very quick heel turn. And personally, I loved it. I think that I'm in that same boat as a lot of people with it. And again, There's a lot of things that can happen between now and when we can legitimately say that her heel turn was a success. But for the night and the Toronto crowd who added to this segment, boy, a crowd can change a segment, can it? Add to it, subtract to it. Oof. Toronto was loud all weekend. I have to give the Toronto crowd their due. They didn't just cheer for the hometown heroes just because they're from Canada. And Natalia, out of all the Canadians that appeared over the weekend, I would say that the biggest pop was for Edge. And rightfully so. God, I miss Edge. Edge, I know I'm getting a little off topic, as my brain does, but a quick side note on Edge. Man, I really miss him competing. I do believe that is the first move, any kind of physical altercation that he's gone in since he retired after facing Alberto Del Rio for the World Heavyweight Championship and winning that match at WrestleMania. I believe that that was the very first physical interaction that he's had. Of course, spearing Elias into infinity. And boy, Elias is just a... His act is nothing more than a perfect way to set the table for a babyface to interrupt. That's all his act is for. He comes out, runs down the town he's in, runs down their sports team if they made a big trade. That just seems to be his formula. You know, is there ever a town Elias is in that he's happy to be in? I mean, is there? I mean, you could even go to his hometown. But you could say in his hometown that he's ashamed to be there. I'm ashamed to be from here. I'm glad I left this town. So you could say even his hometown he could run down. I mean, I guess that's just his shtick. I don't know, but it worked. Edge got the biggest Canadian pop of the entire weekend. It was awesome. Like I said, Edge is, I think, one of the most underrated stars of the modern era. And had his career been able to continue, I think he would have been even bigger. I don't think there's a question about that. But Natalia was not exactly the hometown favorite. And that was my fear going into the women's match with Becky and Natalia was, could Becky finally get booed after being a babyface for a full year now? And while there were some boos for her, it was not nearly the visceral and poisonous reaction that it could have been towards Becky Lynch at SummerSlam. And the crowd did not soften on Monday night, even after Natalia came out and she had her arm in a sling, saying that her elbow's dislocated, and talking about her dad, that it's been a year since he died. And, well, why don't I just let you guys listen to the clip, and then we can discuss a little bit.
And it's been 1 year today since my dad died.
And that was her pop when she came out, and that was a monstrous reaction, because number one, I don't think anyone expected it. We all knew that Sasha at some point was coming back. We thought she was going to get involved in the Bayley situation. We thought that she was going to be turning on Bayley, and that they would feud, and we would all just get bad nightmares and flashbacks to their love you, hate you, year and a half, nonsensical, insanely confusing storyline that they had on Monday Night Raw for, again, a year and a half. It was brutal and did almost irreversible damage to Bayley. That is, she's still suffering today. But right now, Sasha Banks, right here in this segment, was the pop of the night. And, let me just continue here, and we will discuss what happens after Sasha does something rather unexpected.
Posting cryptic Instagram.
Oh! Oh my God!
What the hell?
Surprise! Sasha Banks attacking Natalya!
I've been telling everybody all along.
Natalya,
new blue hair, same true colors.
The assault continues.
And so that's Sasha beating down, beating the hell out of Natalya. And subsequent to that, Becky Lynch comes down and, well, she seems to suffer the same fate.
Natalya couldn't even have a moment about her father.
Oh, here comes someone who knows Sasha very, very well. The man, the Raw Women's Champion, Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch and Sasha now in a brawl on Monday Night Raw. And remember what Becky said earlier. I'm coming after anybody that's done me wrong. And Becky Lynch now going after Banks. Becky said big props, big respect to Natalya after their fight last night. And now a right hand by Banks has floored the champion. Sasha Banks has returned with a vengeance. With an evil, evil vengeance here tonight.
So after that that beatdown, Becky gets hit with numerous chair shots. Now, one little criticism. Gotta have something in here. It's not even about Becky, not even about Sasha. It's the theology, this constant need to only sell back chair shots where, and Seth has done this too, I think, the Baron Corbin and vice versa. Is that when you do chair shots and you're trying to do multiple ones and show you're super aggressive, the person constantly just pops up. And so just so that person can hit them with a chair, and they pop up and you hit them with a chair when they're on all fours in that tabletop position. And they just keep popping up to make it. I mean, why don't they just stay the hell down? I mean, I don't understand it. Now, furthermore, if you kept hitting them, why would, you know, they should be in a weakened state where they can't get to their hands and knees. But I mean, if you guys know what I'm talking about, it's hard for me to put it into words. It's just that constant chair shot theology that WWE has. Obviously they're not doing headshots. I understand that, but there's got to be a better way. It just looks a little bit phony. Nonetheless, this was a very good segment. And what I didn't play for you guys was the chant from the crowd, the Canadian crowd, chanting for thank you, Sasha. Thank you, Sasha, for beating the hell out of Natalya. Now, what you could say is, it's the international crowd. It's not a true Canadian crowd. I would venture to guess it was a high percentage of Canadian fans attending this show. I don't believe that it was all just these crazy European fans or the ardent American hardcore fans. It was just those wacky, you know, European fans that just come over and like to cause ruckus and cheer for people that normally get booed and booed people they normally cheer as. It's just it's like the Raw after WrestleMania. They just chalk it up to just, oh, it's, you know, that's just people having fun, which is a whole bunch of crap is what that is. It's just nothing more than WWE, unfortunately, sticking it to their ardent fan base that has kept them alive since the Attitude Era, right? But this reaction, I believe, was genuine. I don't think it was something that was trying to be manufactured to try to be cool, to try to be rebellious against what WWE's trying to do. I think this is a genuine, excited reaction for Sasha, who came back with a big impact, huge impact. She came back and just owned the ring, and Becky Lynch couldn't stop her. And it felt as if, now I it's weird to say this, but it felt as if Sasha is, for the night at least, took Becky's place in terms of not just story, in terms of not just what people are talking about, but in terms of who's the man here, right? when Becky Lynch turned, it was the same feeling that I got when Becky Lynch, quote, turned heel by WWE, which turned her into the biggest babyface of all time. Could Sasha Banks be going through the same metamorphosis of well, we're turning her heel, and clearly she's trying to be framed as a heel. Did you hear Michael Cole's commentary? He said the evil, he's used the word evil intentions. Evil. You don't frame a baby face and use the word evil. So it is very clear from WWE's position that it's Sasha as a heel, which is fine because Becky Lynch needs someone to dance with. She's kind of run the course since Ronda Rousey and the, you know, 2 or 3 month hangover with Lacey Evans and then Natalya, and now she has a heel Sasha to work with. And I think that's a good thing. Sasha, it feels like she's been gone longer than 4 months, doesn't it? It just feels like Sasha's been gone for 6 to 8 months. Maybe because WrestleMania feels like it was a year ago. And, you know, we all heard about the backstage nonsensical stuff that went on with Bayley and Sasha, with them bitching about how they were women's tag team champions and they were promised there was going to be a longer run and they had to end up dropping them. And all this stuff about Sasha posting weird stuff on Instagram. She has to find herself. Oh, when I find myself. All these cliches that she puts up. And this stuff that makes, you know, it's just silly stuff. But when Sasha put up the picture a couple of days ago of her with new hair that was dyed like blonde or something, I said that could this be a precursor, a shadowing of, like a foreshadowing is my word, of a character change. Because that has always been the case. When a babyface turns heel or a heel turns babyface, that individual needs to change their look. So it was a precursor. It was a foreshadowing. And I don't want to toot my own horn, but I kind of called it on my Twitter feed. Go look. I said, could this lead to a true character change for Sasha Banks? And while we didn't get the blonde that she dyed it to, at least in that picture, maybe it was a wig, we did get a official heel turn by Sasha, which, is it sustained? Is this just Becky Lynch 2.0? And WWE is going to be, again, swimming upstream. I don't think, here's what I believe. If the fans continue to cheer for Sasha Banks, and it's a Becky Lynch 2.0 from a year ago, exactly when Becky Lynch turned, quote, heel, again, in very, very big air quotes there. The thing is with that, they were at a very big shortage of true women baby faces, and they instantly got one. Now, they've got enough baby faces on the women's Raw side, and they need somebody for Becky to dance with. You can't have WWE flip Sasha babyface just because their fans are cheering for her because of the fact that Becky Lynch needs someone. She needs a heel to work with. And right now, it would not be smart on WWE's part to just flip it because the fans for a few weeks cheer for Sasha. I would say give this a little bit of a try. Do a trial run of a month. Get to Clash of Champions. And if the WWE fans are still cheering for Sasha, then maybe you consider it. But you need a healthy balance of heels and faces. And right now, there is a lack of a good, true heel in the women's division on Raw. So I'm fine if WWE does not turn Sasha babyface and they just refuse and they just stay the course. I'm fine with it because you can't have all babyfaces facing babyfaces, and the fans are going to be forced to choose, which may not be a bad thing. And maybe you get a heel out of babyface versus babyface, and you get a test of who is the audience truly loyal to. I'm not against it. I mean, they had The Rock versus Austin at WrestleMania 17. That was framed as babyface versus babyface, and we got Austin turning heel out of it. I mean, so having two faces against each other is not the end of the world, but it is nice to have traditional heels once in a while. So I'm very curious to see how long they stick with this if Sasha continues to get cheered. I think they need to change her music up a bit. Her music has I love her music. I really do. I love it. I know some people, I mean, it all depends on your taste of music, of course, but I love her music, and she's a good looking girl, and she's got charisma. She's got that magnetic look to her in terms of when she's on the screen and she's talking, you listen and you pay attention. Not just because she's good looking. I'm talking, she just has the it factor, the X factor, whatever factor it is. But the fact of the matter is, if I were WWE, as much as I always tell them to stop swimming upstream, go with what the audience wants, the thing is, you can do more with the men's roster when it comes to that. You have more flexibility in the men's side because there's more men. In the women's side, you have a much smaller roster of women. It's scaled down significantly from the number of men. And there's only so many babyfaces and heels that are over that you can put in that main event spot to face the champion. And when you have a face champion, it makes it a little more difficult to turn somebody face just because the fans are telling you to. You need to stay the course here. And I would give it a good old college try. I would say that the deadline for successful face or heel is honestly Clash of Champions in 4 weeks. I really would believe that. I believe that. So as much as I complain about it and tell WWE, oh my God, just turn them face or turn them heel because the fans are telling you, stay the course on this one. It makes sense. I understand why they won't, and I really don't believe they will. So, but very cool moment, big reaction for Sasha, very interesting reaction from the Canadian crowd that just did not embrace Natalia the way that I expected her to, and I expected them to. But it was certainly a very, very cool moment. Okay, but some other stories from Monday Night Raw. Braun Strowman at the end of the show comes out along with Seth Rollins and Ricochet to even the odds against the OC. And we got a non-finish in a match that was advertised incessantly, which is fine. You need to promote your main event. Maybe I'm just not used to it. Maybe that's the thing. I don't want to say I was annoyed by it. I was just taken back a little bit by how much they were promoting the main event. And again, that's not a complaint. It just felt different because maybe they should have been doing this all along and they just haven't been. But I was fine with it. But I'm sure many in attendance were like, hey, you promoted the hell out of this main event. And again, you give a non-finish. You give a non-finish, which means you know what's happening with this. They were promoting it all night too of Clash of Champions. And when they kept saying champion versus champion, I said, no way this match gets a clean finish. This match is meant for the pay-per-view, and that's exactly what we're going to get. I don't understand why the champions are facing each other. It's beyond me. I don't know. It felt a little convenient that AJ Styles came out and just put himself in the picture of, well, I'm a champion and you're a champion. Let's fight. I mean, like, it felt a little too convenient as that's the next pay-per-view. And I wouldn't, honestly, like, I wouldn't even make this a pay-per-view. This is another gimmick pay-per-view, just as the next one is with Hell in a Cell. These pay-per-views that have built-in gimmicks don't make sense because in the story you're trying to tell that everything's unpredictable, anything could happen, you have contrived, controlled storylines predetermined ahead of time. And if this is supposed to be an environment in which anything could happen, you have AJ Styles just by chance, who's a United States champion, coming out to interfere and talk trash to Seth Rollins, who's the Universal Champion, ironically, the day after SummerSlam, the next pay-per-view is Clash of Champions. Champions should only face each other when it makes sense, when there's a feud going on that they need to settle. And it's not even maybe a winner-take-all. The belts don't need to be on the line, but it should feel special when champions who are usually on their own path, carving their own story, when they come together for a reason, not just because it's built into the pay-per-view, WWE pay-per-view schedule, as Hell in a Cell is. You know, the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view is one that annoys me most out of the entire schedule. Beyond the, don't get me started on Survivor Series. It's the one night a year, my God. You know what, I'm gonna save myself for that because we got a lot of time between now and November. So I'm gonna take a breath and ignore it for now. But we have the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view built into the WWE schedule. So let me get this straight. If the for the first time for the very first time, if AJ Styles and Ricochet had gotten together per se, that's deserving of a Hell in a Cell match. The cell is the damaged collateral damage here. The cell is what's being hurt. This is sacred ground. Do you understand? Do people understand? Does WWE remember just how special Hell in a Cell felt when it was warranted, when it only was brought about when a feud called for it, not just because it's put into the WWE pay-per-view schedule as some kind of gimmick, just as TLC is, so you just have to have these stipulations just because the pay-per-view schedule calls for it? What happened to good story? That's not good storytelling. You're allowing outside forces to dictate the stipulations of your match that may not be deserving of the stipulations you have in place predetermined. That's my issue. Hell in a Cell has been destroyed because you have programs and feuds that aren't deserving of the cell. The cell is holy ground. The cell is where rivalries go to die in a good way. They go to die because that's the end of them. That's where you conclude feuds, which makes Hell in a Cell matches now watered down to the point of why bother? It's really just done such damage to the cell that used to feel so special. When somebody would announce that match, you'd go, oh my God, it's a Hell in a Cell match. Now they got, what, like three of them on there? They've done a women's one. Then there's like two men's ones. Okay. It's Hell in a Cell. Wonderful. As cage matches have been overdone. No, but okay. I'm now just ranting about the pay-per-view schedule, but I feel like I'm warranted in that. So when you have Clash of Champions, which is, a built-in pay-per-view for the schedule during the year, you're telling the fans, well, champions are going to clash. Well, if it's an unpredictable environment, what if they don't? What if you don't get the champions to get in a scuttlebutt with each other? What if you don't? Then Clash of Champions means you have to, change the name of the pay-per-view? It just hurts the overall narrative and the overall believability of the product. When you have rivalries that you just know are going to be dictated by the name of the pay-per-view and the gimmick of the pay-per-view. Pay-per-views should not have gimmicks. The matches, the rivalries, the programs, that should dictate what is on the pay-per-view, not vice versa. Okay, I think I've said my piece. I'm gonna move on here. But we have the OC who now have three, I guess, kind of a makeshift team that have even the odds against the OC in Ricochet, who really didn't get much of a reaction, and Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman. And we got a non-finish, which, I'm sure pissed people off that we didn't get a finish. I mean, they only went, 7-8 minutes before Gallows and Anderson interfered, causing a disqualification. Which I'm fine with, because again, this is a match for the pay-per-view. If you've watched wrestling for any amount of time, I would say 6 months, 12 months, you probably have an idea that, yeah, this match isn't really going to have a finish because it's a Clash of Champions pay-per-view, which means these two have to square off and we'll get a clean finish at the pay-per-view. You don't get a clean finish on Raw when they're just starting their rivalry. That's not the formula of WWE's, presentation of professional wrestling. That's not how they do things. And if you've been watching WWE for 6 to 12 months, you probably saw this one coming. But I'm fine with it. Braun got a very strong reaction. We haven't seen him in quite a while in a significant program. So Braun being there certainly added some excitement. Ricochet, who has been put in a main event spot here and really, really gotten the fast track, which WWE needs to be careful with. Be very careful. You don't need the Roman Reigns symptoms here. But it's a good 3-on-3, which I'm sure will end in a six-man tag team match right up Teddy Long's alley. Next Raw, the Raw after, maybe the go-home show, right? I mean, that's just what it's going to be. And maybe some variations of 2-on-2 and 1-on-1 within that combination. There's a ton of ways to to get yourself between now and Clash of Champions with those six men. You could, again, there's a lot you can do. Handicap matches, one-on-one matches. You could do two-on-two, and then eventually you go to the six-man tag, and that's probably what ends up happening. Alrighty, another little thing about the show is not anything that even happened in the ring. And again, I have the Hulu version of Raw. I like to put that disclaimer out there. How many times? Count it, because I only came up with like four, and that, again, that's a Hulu abbreviated version of Raw. How many times did we get to see Roman Reigns on Raw replaying over and over and over again the SmackDown Live from 2 weeks ago, when Roman Reigns had somebody tip, I don't know, a bunch of crates and some scaffolding on him, which ironically just happened to have a camera angle right there to get the perfect shot. It's stupid when they do that. Just as if, and by the way, there was also dash cam footage from the assailant that happened to have a live feed. And by the way, if WWE didn't put this in there, well, how did the assailant get that footage into the promo? And shouldn't WWE know who that is if they were able to put it in the promo? Stupid. It's so amateur to do that. I mean, it's like I have no experience in professional camera work. It's like I went in there and was like, yeah, that'd be cool. The angle will be great. Who cares if, you know, nobody's thinking about that. Nobody's thinking about like how, why would there be a camera here? People know there's cameras everywhere. Really? So you have a camera in every nook and cranny possible in the arena and in random rental cars that are going to be used in a attempted vehicular homicide. Really? Okay. It's so amateur. Oh my gosh. All right. But we got that repeat over and over and over and over and over and over and over about Roman Reigns and his attempted mystery assailant, which is getting a little bit tiring. I'm like, we get it. Okay. Roman Reigns as a mystery attacker. We get it. Let's just get to who it is. Okay. But I'm fine with the slow burn, but man, I mean, it's just torture when you see it over. Okay. So we get that. And then we have Samoa Joe coming out there, and it was a match between him and Sami Zayn, but it happened because Sami Zayn was trash talking about Samoa Joe to the Street Profits, who I don't even know what their role is. Like, I don't know what they are. Are they a classier version of Crime Time? Like, I don't know what the Street Profits are. What are the Street Profits? Like, what are they? Are they just kind of this slick-talking, I don't know what. Like, maybe somebody can explain it to me. I'm not gravitating towards the Street Profits. They just are kind of like banter. Like, I tune them out so quickly when I hear them talk. Like, it's amazing. It's almost as if they just turn a switch in my brain that's like, don't listen to anything I'm about to say, because it's all jibber jabber and nothing but all smoke and mirrors and no substance. It's just blah. Like, it's just nonsensical stuff that they're saying. Am I supposed to have like a secret decoder and then slow down the footage to understand what they're saying? Like, is this Bray Wyatt promos all over again? I mean, I don't know. But that's how it ended up happening, with Samoa Joe being right behind Sami Zayn's back. And Sami Zayn and Samoa Joe have a very, very quick match, ending in a coquina clutch for Sami Zayn, who goes night-night and taps out to the coquina clutch. And Sami Zayn continues his spiral into the abyss, into the center of the earth. Sami Zayn is just falling at a very rapid pace. I'm not sure who he pissed off. I don't know if him saying AEW a few months ago was the culprit. I don't even know anymore, but whoever Sami Zayn pissed off, I know you could say, oh, he's still on TV, he's still being utilized, but he's been defined down so much that you can't even make a argument to me that, well, he's on TV, they're using him, so they can't. No. We've seen, they put Dean Ambrose on TV when he was leaving the company. made him job to Nia Jax and made him job to EC3. I mean, there's certain times you can't just tell me that they're still using them, so they can't have an issue with them. Nonsense. Something is up with Sami Zayn in the WWE. I just don't know what it is yet. I can't put my finger on it. But what I will say is that Sami Zayn, every time I hear him talk, I'm just thinking, how is there not a championship on this shoulder? Sami Zayn is so good in the ring and is so believable on the mic, and he's clear and he doesn't feel scripted and he's natural, that it makes me very confused that he doesn't have a championship on his shoulder. But Samoa Joe, also more notably about this match, other than Sami losing, which is just becoming the norm, is that Samoa Joe apparently didn't turn babyface. Maybe this is another Vince McMahon special of, the swerve, you thought we were turning him. But then he blamed it on all of us, and that was that. I mean, he said he would never forgive all of us for pointing the finger at him, but did anyone really point the finger at him? Like, who was accusing him of Samoa Joe? He was on the list of potential suspects, but people weren't aggressively going, oh, it's Samoa Joe, it's got to be Samoa Joe. People were talking about Daniel Bryan that way, not Samoa Joe. So this whole idea that everyone thought it was Samoa Joe, I didn't. Many people didn't. It was just this narrative that the WWE thought the fans were going to take and go with. They thought the fans were going to assume it was Samoa Joe and just, oh, well, now we can have Joe attack the fans for accusing him. I mean, but it really wasn't that big of an investment. It wasn't that big of an assumption. It was just, it could be Joe, right? It was just, but you never thought it really was. I don't know. It was a little bit wonky, but so Samoa Joe continues to stay heel. Okay, fine. It was just kind of a temporary babyface turn, kind of a faux turn to see how the fans would react, and they clearly decided to go the opposite way and have Samoa Joe remain heel. And fine, have him remain heel. I'm fine with that. But I just, again, you guys know how I feel about his misbookings and everything else. So, okay, moving down the line here, Seth Rollins' promo to open Raw, I thought it was short and sweet and to the point. Maybe it's me, and again, I'm not going to crap on this promo because it's exactly what WWE feels a babyface should do, and the crowd reacted, for the most part, pretty accordingly to this. Maybe it's just my cynical SOB brain. I don't know. But when I get a blatant pandering from any superstar, any wrestler, I immediately get turned off. Immediately. And Seth is talking about how, you know, you guys, you fans, you guys, you know, supported me. And when I heard you cheering for me, it you know, I found a piece of me I didn't know existed. And you guys helped me beat Brock Lesnar. We beat Brock Lesnar. We are the universe. I mean, like, we all the way home. I mean, I can't stand the we thing. And I understand the psychology behind it, that it's a journey you're going on with the fans. If you're trying to bring them along on your side, that it's supposed to be this collaboration and this relationship and this connection with the fans. And, you know, they want to feel like they're a part of your journey and that they helped you. It's just so, I don't know. It's so soft and childish. Don't give me the wee crap. Don't give me the wee stuff. I understand on the opposite end of the tracks, if you're a heel, you refer to the audience as you people. Nobody likes to be called you people. It's disrespectful. I understand the logic behind that and the psychology behind that. I understand all the implications. I know what that means. I know the references. I know it's disrespectful. I get it. But it's just, it's too formulaic for me. It's too soft. Anybody else feel this way, or am I just being nasty? It just feels pandering-ish. It feels not genuine. It's not realistic that Seth, out of his entire career, everything he's ever done, that, oh, no, this was the moment that I actually heard the fans and I go, ooh, that's giving me energy. I mean, it's like spinach to Popeye, apparently. I don't know. It's like, I guess, it's we hulked up. We hulked up Seth Rollins by just cheering for him. It's like Rainbow Bright found her star sprinkles, and we just, oh, he got his powers back. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I'm sorry. It's just because it's so formulaic when you hear a babyface speak, and it's not Seth who's guilty about this. It's creative. I don't need the wee stuff. You do your thing. I'll let you know if I support you. I don't need you to fake like this is some kind of true alliance with me. Like that I'm somehow actually affecting your in-ring performances and your in-ring your in-ring wins and losses. It's just like, get away, like, ugh. It's icky. It's icky to me. The other thing I did like on Raw, but again, I liked the segment. Don't get me wrong. I think it's just a flaw in my brain. So I will fully admit that. So the segment did what it needed to do. So I liked the segment. So I always wanted to clear that up. I thought it was good. The other thing that happened that I liked that was good was Ziggler and The Miz. Ziggler said that he couldn't compete. He comes out and is clutching his ribs in his midsection, and that he got speared so many times last night. He's not medically cleared to compete. He's coming out in his jeans and a t-shirt, and ends up attacking Miz at a vulnerable moment, only to have the match to begin with. Wouldn't the referee have known, if you're an official in the match, that you got word that Ziggler was actually not medically cleared to compete? Yet the referee was still standing out there. Wouldn't have just been no referee. I don't know, but who knows? So I don't know. I'm sorry. If you're going to simulate a sport. But this was a good segment because Ziggler attacked The Miz. The Miz tried to fight back, and then he eventually got the win on Ziggler. And then after that, after he made Ziggler tap out to the figure four, you had Ziggler doing what he did the night before with Goldberg, basically running him down. You don't have the guts to finish me, blah, blah, blah. And then subsequently to that, The Miz comes down and gives Ziggler a skull-crushing finale. I don't know why I like this. I shouldn't like it. It's foolish on the part of Ziggler. But it's still oddly satisfying. It's oddly satisfying. Maybe somebody can break down why. I like this in Ziggler. Because the thing is, and I mentioned this last night too from my SummerSlam review, Ziggler is such damaged goods, I don't really care if he gets squashed in matches anymore. He's a great guy to be in the ring with. Of course. Sell like no other, work like no other. All of that's true, and you need a guy on your roster like that, and Ziggler fills that role very well. He's also a great guy that you want new people to work with because he makes everything so easy, and he takes care of people, and he sells, and all that. So Ziggler's a guy you want on your side, and you want he's a valuable asset, even if they're perceiving to bury him on a weekly basis as they are with Sami Zayn. But I really enjoyed this. I don't know what it is about. I don't know why I enjoyed this version of Ziggler. I don't know what the end game is. I don't know why. I hope he didn't just one day go, I quit again, right? Maybe that's where it's headed. He gets so depressed, he just quits. And then we just don't see Ziggler for a while. And then he comes back in a screaming promo again. I mean, who knows? But I don't know why. I don't know who came up with this or why, but I love it. I just do. It's good stuff, and it's always fun seeing Ziggler get his ass handed to him. Because I had no more investment in the Ziggler character as a true potential main eventer. That's why I don't care. Otherwise, I'd be saying, what are they doing with this guy? They're misusing it. No, that's what he is. I've just accepted that they are not going to be moving forward with Ziggler on any platform, on any show, as their guy. So why not just let WWE bury him into oblivion, right? It is a shame, but that is unfortunately where The Miz stands in the eyes of Vince McMahon, or Ziggler stands in the eyes of Vince McMahon. All right. The other match we got was a 2 out of 3 falls with Andrade versus Rey Mysterio. And maybe the WWE management is listening to this show because, my God, we got an outcome that I can't remember the last time that happened. Andrade beat Rey Mysterio 2 falls in a row. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. And Corey Graves said, this is an ultra rare feat. It shouldn't be. Okay. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. The number of 2 out of 3 falls matches that WWE's had in the last month and a half is mind numbing. With no explanation as to why, what's on the line, nothing. How did this match come to be? Why is it always 2 out of 3 falls? But very unpredictable of Andrade getting the 2 straight falls against Mysterio. And then Mysterio coming back with post-match interview with Charlie Caruso talking about how, you know, this is, what is he going to do? I need to provide for my family. And he's talking about, I don't know, he's just basically trying to convey that he's a family man. So we're all supposed to relate to that. I don't know. I'm a bit over the Rey Mysterio act. However, I'm amazed, and I am I have a lot of respect for Rey Mysterio, and he still looks like he hasn't missed a step, which is absolutely amazing. I've just never gotten into the character. When he was the World Heavyweight Champion, I was not into that. When he beat Randy Orton and Triple H at the Royal Rumble in 2007, 6, something along those lines, and he won, I was not happy. I understand it's the underdog stories, the ultimate underdog. Well, how many times have we seen that? Daniel Bryan was a little bit more of an organic feel to it. He looked like more like the common man. It was years of frustration with WWE booking, all of that. All right. So we also got on Monday Night Raw a match between Cedric Alexander and Drew McIntyre. I enjoyed this. I mean, we had McIntyre defeat Alexander. I'm totally fine with that. It was a wicked claymore that turned Cedric Alexander, you know, inside out. And it's a good way to just remind fans that McIntyre's here and that he can be dominant when he needs to be. This is a guy, too, that how is he not holding a championship? He's a veteran now. He's paid his dues. He's reshaped his body. He's believable. And maybe it's just not his turn yet. But he certainly checks all the boxes of being a money heel champion. So I don't know. But they're continuing to use him just in small capacities. It was a very good match, though. Really enjoyed it. No Way Jose versus Robert Roode. I don't know what to tell you. It was just kind of one of those things like, oh, yeah, like these guys, like I kind of forgot that they were here, right? Roode delivered a spinebuster and followed with the glorious DDT for the pinfall victory. I don't know. It was just kind of like, hey, let's get these guys on the show because they haven't been there in a while. That's what it felt like. It was a bit underwhelming. I'll just say that. But, all right. So, again, the big story of the week was Sasha Banks returning and turning heel. That was the big story of the week. I enjoyed Raw overall. We got also a little bit of the 24/7 championship. I had forgotten about that. I thought this was a good segment, too. We had, in that match, The Revival, R-Truth, and Elias all won the 24/7 championship. And it's, yes, of course, it's off Maria Kanellis. Thank God. Thank God. And that's what I said about how to get the belt off of Maria. It's going to have to be Mike Kanellis who does it, because it's going to have to be when she's sleeping or when she's vulnerable laying on her back to get a referee in there for a 3 count. Nobody else would have been able to do that. People would have been up in arms. Oh my God, they're covering a pregnant lady. That's Mike's wife. People would have lose their friggin' minds over it. So Mike Kanellis gets the belt back, and then we get this crazy segment on Raw. And again, and overall, I think very good show. I'd say thumbs up show for Raw, thumbs up show for SmackDown or for SummerSlam rather. And I anticipate a thumbs up for SmackDown Live, which is, well, it's over as we speak. So I will catch up on that tomorrow and deliver your SmackDown Live review tomorrow as well. Again, on the Wednesday, I know these shows are dropping super late. So it's actually to you, like a day later, you're getting them because they're probably downloading to your phone or tablet or your computer overnight and then getting them in the morning. I'll be back again. I'll be traveling all day Thursday, be back Friday, and then be back Sunday for the typical wrestling nostalgia segment of the week and get myself back on track, get myself back on a normal schedule so you guys can get back on schedule. But I did not want to skip doing these shows for you guys and for my own sanity because I love it. I love being able to discuss my thoughts and my passions and my true feelings about the WWE product, which is not without its flaws, that's for sure, but a very good week for WWE so far. I think up and down the card here. Well, yes, there's some complaints. You guys hear them on a weekly basis from me. But I want you to know the overarching theme here is WWE is focusing on wrestling. They seem to be really focusing more on the matches and having more wrestling in the wrestling show. Imagine that. So just a very solid week for WWE. I enjoy them overall. Let's see if this trend continues and they can go 3-for-3 and make SmackDown Live a hit as well. So, alrighty, well, I think that will conclude my SmackDown, well, my Raw review, and then I'm already ahead on SmackDown. I'm, like, trying to start the show and see if it's on Hulu. I don't think it is. Usually it takes until the next morning, so, yep, I don't see it yet. Okay, well, guys, thank you so much for joining me. If you'd like to support the podcast, just go to the Support the Show tab on the WWE Podcast website, and in there is a banner for Amazon. If you do any shopping there, all you gotta do is go through that banner and instantly, poof, like magic, gives back a little bit to the show. Amazon kicks back a little to the show, you don't, of whatever you purchased, and it's a great way to support the show, and I appreciate everyone who does it. I really do look and I appreciate it, and it's much notice to that, I promise you. So you can also go to patreon.com/WWE podcast if you want a ad-free version of every show. And don't forget, too, that I'm looking for your feedback on whether or not I should be doing or you want a video stream. If you do want a video stream, let me know. I'm very curious to hear your thoughts. This show is for you guys. So if you want to see me do video, hey, let's do it, right? All right. Well, thank you so much, guys, for listening. As always, I'll talk to you next time.